141 951 1025. It's time to talk football. It's Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Good evening and welcome to Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Stephen Davis says Rangers have shown they've got the quality to win the title. It's now all about the mental strength. No worry at Celtic though, because Christopher Julian says they're capable of recovering from blips, and Partick Thistle against Dundee United could be the pick of the bunch in the Championship tomorrow. I'm Gordon Duncan. Joining me tonight is Craig Beattie and Hugh Keevans.
This winter break's dragging on a bit, is it not? And what about the transfer window? Has somebody locked it by mistake? It's oh so quiet. Good job, there are terrific games this weekend. What's not to love about Partick Thistle against Dundee United or Morton at home to Dunfermline? If they're not exciting, I will step back from being the senior member of the Super Scoreboard family and work to become totally dependent on Celtic and Rangers coming home to finish what they've started.
I knew you'd be the one to get that reference in here this week. The other pundits wouldn't even dream of it, but you've managed it without getting us in any trouble as well. Craig, what's on your mind?
Well, the Inverness game's on tomorrow, so more focus on the Scottish Championship.
Off,
so
you mean?
It's off, I beg your pardon, it's off already, waterlogged up there. So Dundee United have got the opportunity to go 17 points clear. But I think it's, you know, obviously locally with Partick Thistle down at the bottom of the division. So there's some really, really good games on tomorrow. Thistle United is the match in Morton against Dunfermline. So
yeah, I must say, Hugh, you can't beat it when we've got a full card and all the divisions are involved. But it is a nice change of pace for us on a Saturday to be able to give a bit more focus to games that we otherwise aren't able to during the season. And that one between Partick Thistle and Dundee United, Craig mentioned some other ones, that's got a really good look about it.
Thistle are in a fascinating position whereby they could, and it's not out with the bounds of possibility, make the playoff places. Or they could slip back the other way and go into the relegation playoff places. So they have to be careful. Morton had a terrific result last weekend. They could do with following that up against Dunfermline tomorrow. And elsewhere, you've got Alloa, bottom, playing Arbroath. Big day for Peter Grant there. And Dundee at home to Ayr. Dundee cannot afford another home defeat.
Okay, the number you need tonight is 0141 951 1025. We are on Twitter as well at Clyde SSB. And as we always do during the winter break, in the second hour tonight, we're going to do something a bit different. We're going to try and shine a light on some of the aspects of Scottish football that we just don't get the chance to during the season. So we're going to be joined by a couple of very special guests as we look ahead, or we preview all things grassroots football. I know lots of you feel very passionate about what's going on below the senior level of the game, so we'll do that in the second hour of tonight's show. If you're looking ahead to a game tomorrow, or you want to get stuck in on some of today's transfer rumour and speculation, now is the time to pick up the phone. 0141 951 1025. They're still sunning themselves, the majority of our top flight clubs, whether it be Dubai, Tenerife or somewhere else. They're not due back just yet. So let's check in with some of the training cramps. Christopher Julian says he's still confident Celtic will lift the title this season because they've already shown during the campaign that they're capable of bouncing back from some blips.
All the bad moments that we had in the Champions League, the Ibs away, Livingstone away, and now the Rangers at home. It's some bad moment on the moment, but you have to get through it and work hard for it. And every time we did, so now I'm not going to be surprised when I see the team and everyone get up after that and be stronger. Me, I think we're going to win it because me, that's my mentality. And the mentality the team have since the beginning of the year, we're going to work hard, like I say again. And our first goal is to win the championship. And we're going to do our best to just achieve that. I'm going to keep pushing myself, and I'm sure the staff are going to do it to me too, to push myself to be even better, to help the team to be better and to do just the maximum that I can do to win everything that we can.
He doesn't have any new teammates, of course, yet, no. Hugh Keevans. Give us a brief summary of the week that we've had. It's been more fascination with the outgoings than the incomings. Scott Sinclair is the big one. Lewis Morgan maybe set to join him, moving out the door, heading to Miami. back pages today. You've got names like Tyrese Campbell being linked with both Celtic and Rangers. He's at Stoke at the moment. Andres Sprorar is one that's been bubbling away for quite some time. What have you made of the last few days?
Typical transfer window. I think Celtic need to bring in players. I'm not sure that Rangers' need is as great. They go into the winter break with the title in the balance. I honestly believe the title is in the balance, and it could come down to the two matches between Celtic and Rangers, one in March and one after the split. With regard to Scott Sinclair, let there be no doubt that he was an excellent signing for Celtic and graced the club while he was there. Good luck to him at Preston North End. For me, Lewis Morgan's got the dream move. I mean, Miami, David Beckham, the chance to be in at the birth of something brand new there. And David Beckham, with the resources that he will have at his disposal, will bring in other big names. So for me, Lewis Morgan has got himself a real dream move. It didn't happen for him at Celtic. It didn't happen for him at Sunderland. He's right to try and take this opportunity.
If it's Lewis Morgan and Scott Sinclair, Craig, added to the fact that Neil Lennon even mentioned that they may look to bring in a wide man, that looks like it's certainly on, does it not?
Yeah, it certainly looks like it's on the cards. You know, the forward area as well. And I heard Neil talking about that the other day. So, you know, I'm sure Neil and his backroom team will have been doing their homework. They'll be working on things as we speak. We know it's not easy to get a transfer over the line, but they'll certainly be out there trying to bring a wide player in.
Yeah, as I say, I think Celtic need to bring players in, Craig. I think the game against Rangers that saw us all into the winter break saw Rangers have a greater physicality than Celtic. They have to address that. There's the perennial problem of Edouard. What if anything happens to him? So they need a couple of players in this window for sure.
But there is still a long time to go. I sensed a bit of nervousness on the phones last night. People saying it's the 9th of January and we've still not signed anyone. I mean, there's still quite a long time to go.
I always reference one example, and it's the most topical example. Scott Sinclair, off to Preston now. He was signed at the very, very end of the transfer window by Brendan Rodgers. He made his debut in a heartbeat. He played the second half at Tynecastle. He scored the winning goal and he never looked back.
01419511025 on the phones at Clyde SSB on Twitter. Let's dive in and speak to John, who's a Rangers fan from Cambus Lang. What's on your mind tonight, John?
Good evening, panel.
Hi, John.
How are you tonight?
Yeah, not too bad at all.
I just want up to say, I'll go with what Hugh's saying. I don't think Rangers really need to bring anybody in. I think it's more about not letting anybody go, especially our top players. I know every player has got a price, and for the first time in a few years, Rangers do have sellable assets, but every player there just now, the Camaras, the Barisics, the Morelis, the Taverniers, they've all got to be kept if we want to make a serious going for the title. I'm looking at the team now, the squad. I don't see where a player could come in and better the squad, and they're probably trying to get rid of some of the players, the fringe players, rather than bring anybody in, because I don't see much improvement bringing in anybody in January. What do the panel think?
I mean, I read Stephen Gerrard's comments this morning about 10 in a row and stopping 10 in a row being an obsession for the Rangers supporters, winning 10 in a row being an obsession for the Celtic supporters, and he's absolutely correct. On that basis, no one of any stature, no one who could make a material difference to the outcome of this title race is going to be allowed to leave Ibrox in January. Not a chance. Even if Tottenham come in tomorrow with a massive bid for Alfredo Morelos in the absence of Harry Kane for the remainder of the season, Rangers couldn't sell him because there would be uproar, mayhem. Call it what you like. It couldn't happen. It won't happen.
Yeah, John, I agree with you. I don't think there's much strengthening at all required. And, you know, on the show last Friday night, me and Hugh spoke about it. And I think what we had identified was that potentially extending Jermaine Defoe's contract would be much beneficial to Rangers and to Stephen Gerrard. And apart from that, you know, they've got the game in hand where they can potentially go top of the league. And they've been playing particularly well. Stephen Gerrard seems content. If there's something a bit left field comes up and he has or manages to get the funds to bring somebody in that would strengthen it, I'm absolutely certain that he would do that. But I don't think he's panicking at the minute, and I don't think there's a need to.
I'd like to come back in a second.
On you go, John.
I would say one of the things I would go and try and give Barisic a new contract, because it started the season, I thought he was gone, but see the way he's, the last couple of months, the way he's been playing, he's been phenomenal for Rangers. I mean, you don't play for Croatia, sixth best team in the world, if there's no something about you. Now he's settled, and he's delivered that left foot's like a wand, and he just looks as he's up for the challenge.
All of these things.
I would give him a new contract, get him signed in, whatever it takes. That'd be my priority, sorry.
Well, I don't think there's a priority. I think it'll be attended to in the fullness of time. I think the priority is making sure that you have all of the players that you want to stay at the club, at the club on the 1st of February. And then the second half of the league title race promises to be extremely interesting. It comes down for me to the two matches that Celtic and Rangers will play against each other. If they slip up at Kilmarnock or Hamilton or Perth, then that's your own fault.
John, just on that, because obviously you're very strong in the opinion of that Barisic should get a new contract, and you're absolutely spot on. He's been superb for a number of months now.
I think he signed a 4-year deal when he signed. So, and I know that doesn't, you know, you can still improve the terms of your contract without really adding.
I don't think that's John's priority. It certainly wouldn't be mine. But also, one thing I've learned in football is that form comes and goes. There's no question about that. And the left back area, it was a little bit of a problem area for Steven Gerrard initially, and he's tried Flanagan in there, he's tried Halliday in there. So although he's been on top form recently, I think it's a bit premature to be offering new contracts.
John, what about the other people who might find the exit in the coming days? We've seen a couple already. Andy King going back down, Eros Grezda being moved on. Are there any others that spring to mind, or maybe even any others that you would like to see given more of a chance?
Unfortunately, people like Greg Docherty and McCrory, who look like they're good players, it's just our midfield is really strong now. And I don't think they want to be sitting about and not getting a game or getting in the squad. I like Greg Docherty when he was at Rangers, but I could see his future being somewhere else. McCrory, I would keep him. He's maybe one for the future. I don't know if he's going to get many games, but unfortunately, our midfield is really, really strong now with Jack, Kamara, Davis. And for players like that, they're just going to have to look somewhere else, even maybe somewhere like Flanagan. He's only got 6 months left in his contract. They're going to be honest with him. I don't think they're going to give him a new contract. So it might be for him to look for somewhere else. I think Steven Gerrard's honest with players.
John, 6 months ago, you wouldn't have been offering Barisic a new contract, though.
But do you see Flanagan coming back? I didn't make a difference.
I think Rangers are committed to doing better business in terms of trading players, or to use the term that's on the balance sheet. So, you know, if Flanagan goes, there'll be no protests in Stucky Hall Street. You know, Grezda's gone and others will go. Rangers are sorting out the squad now. But the main priority remains the same. Stop Celtic, and therefore it doesn't matter what is offered for Morelos, he's not going anywhere.
Thank you very much, John. And Canvas Land kicking us off nicely tonight. James is in East Kilbride. Now James, I can't believe the timing on this one. I saw your call pop onto the screen, and that Hugh Keevans almost stole your thunder, didn't he?
He's just about stole my thunder. I think he likes to steal the thunder. We should call him Zeus. So we should Zeus Stevens.
That would be a polite name for me.
That's a good one. So what it is basically, it's just with the Harry Kane situation. Now again, obviously, I know his verdict in the matter. Obviously, he doesn't think it will happen. But you know, things can happen. I'm just wondering, with Harry Kane being out, obviously I know Tottenham are probably not in a position they're out to, you know, qualify for top four in England, but you know, Mourinho will have plans. I'm just wondering, given this, will this be worrying for Celtic Rangers fans, for Edouard and Morelos potentially being targets? I certainly think it's a possibility. I know Harry Kane's going to come back, but I know that Mourinho does like, he's too up top, so it's no even support, but it's a potential partner for Kane. And again, they need, you know, goals right away. You know, I'm thinking if a bid comes in for Edouard, we know Celtic are a selling club. I mean, it's happened to Dembele, obviously, in the January transfer window. So, you know, Celtic are afraid to let players go if the right bid's there. And I'm just wondering, the more interesting one is Morelos, obviously. You know, what kind of bid needs to come in? I'm genuinely of the opinion that, you know, if a 30, 35 million bid comes in for Morelos, there is no chance that Rangers will reject it. I just don't think they could do it.
Yeah, I think you need to keep a sense of perspective. Whether it's Tottenham or anybody else, no one is going to offer £35 million for Alfredo Morelos. No one. And by the same token, no one will offer £35 million for Odson Edouard either. First of all, it will be taken into account where they are scoring their goals, and they will have to do a bit more to merit that kind of transfer fee being offered. But I go back
in
to...
In many ways, it's a... I know it's fascinating and we all do it, I do it as well, but yeah, it's kind of pointless. You can't really tell because you can't compare one player to another. I mean, no. You could come back and say, well, Tierney went for 25, so is it that ridiculous to add a bit on? But you can't really do it with any accuracy. No.
The other point, this is a season unlike any other in the history of our game. There will be a massive fallout at the end of the season for one club or the other. The one that doesn't win this title, there will be massive repercussions. Therefore, as you were, Edouard's going nowhere, no matter the fee offered. Morelos is going nowhere, no matter the fee offered. Because Dave King speaks about stopping 10 in a row. Alistair Johnson, the former chairman, had a wee talk about 10 in a row the other day. Steven Gerrard describes it as the obsession, the magnificent obsession, either to win it or stop it. Therefore, no matter the offer that is made, if any should come along, and we're discussing this hypothetically, no matter the offer made for Edouard or Morelos, they are going nowhere.
And just to muddy the waters, Craig, I noticed some quotes from former Tottenham player Gary Mabbott earlier on saying that he thinks Tottenham should turn to Jermaine Defoe as a temporary backup for Harry Kane. So all of a sudden we've moved all three of them down to White Hart Lane. It's not White Hart Lane anymore, of course.
Yeah. Listen, if that's the case, then it's going to be an even more interesting second half of the season. I'm in agreement with you. I think the ramifications, if one of the managers or clubs were to move their prized asset on, and you know, it would go on that one of them's obviously going to lose the league, one of them's going to win the league, one's going to lose it. And I think the fallout from that would be too big to even take that chance, if I'm being honest. Obviously, Defoe is not going to cost that amount of money should they need a short-term replacement. It'd be interesting to see Gary Mabbott's done.
Final word to you, James.
Yeah, thanks for letting me back in. Again, Hugh, that's just Hugh's opinion. And Hugh, you don't know matter of fact. I mean, we all speak in hypotheticals, but I mean, you don't matter of fact know that, you know, if a crazy bid comes in, that they won't sell him. One of your other pundits seems to think that, you know, he is worth that money. You know, Jim Duffy was saying the other night that he thinks when Morelos and Edouard are sold, they're going to be sold for more than what Kieran Tierney was sold. So that is in the 30 million bracket. So again, everybody's opinion is different. There is people out there who think that they will go for that money. And depending on if a bid comes in, you know, we don't know how desperate Rangers are really for the money. I know the league's there, you know, the honour and the uproar about the fans, but, you know, let's remember it's a business at the end of the day as well.
Okay, James and East Kilbride, thank you very much. It's 01419511025. It's a good time to call because we're going to get some travel with Stephen, and then we will hear from Steve Davis.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Personal Injury Solicitors. Getting you full compensation is their goal. Talk to Thompson's.com.
Hugh Keevans and Craig Beattie here with me, Gordon Duncan, on tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. We are on the phones, as always, but we are also on Twitter if you'd rather get in touch that way. Baza Barisic is on. He says, Hugh, it's not fair talking about Eduardo Morelos going 35 million. Haller and Joe Linton went for 35 and 40 respectively, and neither are as good. There is the problem, wasn't it? It's just different markets, different players, very difficult to compare. And Token Jester says Spurs in for Morelos must have been him getting into the SSB team of the decade. Well done, well said. I think he says that with full sincerity. Yeah. Hugh, I don't think that was tongue in cheek at all.
Blame Harry Redknapp, blame the old king of the jungle. because he was one who started it this morning, saying that Morelos, in his opinion, could light up Tottenham Hotspur. So don't blame me, blame Harry.
1419511025. Let's hear a bit from Stephen Davis, shall we? He says Rangers have proven already they've got the quality to win the league, so it's now about the mentality. But he says no one's getting ahead of themselves.
We'll take a lot of belief from it, but we'll not get carried away either. We know it's only 3 points and there's a lot of work to do, but certainly we'll take confidence from it. It's important that we go and show that desire and our qualities between now and the end of the season to go and try and achieve something together. I certainly think we've got the qualities and the capabilities to do it. We have to show, time will tell, whether we can show that we've got the mentality to do it as well. I think sometimes there's such fine lines between success and not reaching your goals. But I think something for me is we've shown progression in terms of games. Maybe last year in the first part of the season where we would have dropped points, we've managed to get the results. So we've shown good resilience to now, but it's important we go and replicate that in the second part of the season as well.
Mentality, there's an interesting aspect. Craig Beattie, a few weeks ago you appeared on television and you said it would be interesting to see what would happen if Rangers managed to sort of claw it back and win the game at the end of the year. Could Celtic handle that task? You got a little bit of criticism for it.
Yeah, I got dog's abuse.
I think that just about covers it. But are we now seeing it in action? Is this going to be abilities the priority for both sides? But how much of this running is going to be about the mental strength?
Yeah, what was actually posed to me was that we had 4 games to go if it was in the same position. And I didn't say either way that one team would have the bottle, the other team wouldn't have the bottle. So just to be absolutely clear on that, I just said it would be interesting, Celtic in that position, because they've been pretty much unchallenged for the previous 8 years. So even for the likes of Scott Brown, James Forrest, the guys who have been there course and distance, if it goes right down to the wire this season, it's going to be very interesting for everybody watching. However, having a strong mentality most certainly helps, and Rangers seem to have built a stronger mentality. Stephen's saying that himself in interviews, winning games this season that he feels like they wouldn't have won last season. Potentially that's the kind of Steven Gerrard factor, because that's how he appeared to be as a player. He's had more time to work with the squad, and that may be rubbing off on him, you know, as well as experienced senior players like your Defoes, like your Davises in your squad.
To be fair then, do we have to wait a little bit before that really kicks in? Because you used the word unchallenged there, but of course at this time last season Rangers were challenging Celtic, yep, just as they are this season, and Celtic managed to kick on and move ahead in the second half.
Yeah, I do think so, and again, that's how I had said, if it goes down to the sort of 3-4 game stage where there's a point or a couple of goals either way, if it's on goal difference, because as you rightly said, Rangers at one point last December were in front for a short spell. Mm-hmm. So listen, we're going to go down a stretch. I think myself and Hugh are both in agreement it's going to go down to the wire, and you know, it's going to be an interesting spectacle for all.
Interesting, the key word, Hugh, because when you look at in previous seasons, every football fan is entitled to be optimistic, and players always back themselves and managers back themselves as well. But if you were looking at where could Rangers seriously have gotten the belief from in previous campaigns? I know they say those things, but yeah, really, where would you get the belief from? That's where it's different this season. There's been enough evidence there. There's been enough things for them. And I'm not saying that means you're going to win the league. Of course not. But there's at least enough there to justify the belief.
Yeah, in Steven Gerrard's first season, you just do it by the numbers. Rangers couldn't make a cup final. They lost the league by 9 points. And when they played Celtic, it looked the same old story. Celtic dominant, almost knowing they would win before the game started. Now, it's different. And if you go back to the question of mentality, and you look at the last game at Celtic Park before the winter break began, Rangers' mentality, on top of everything else, was stronger than Celtic's. And Celtic were playing at home, in front of 60,000 of their own fans. Rangers' mentality was better. When they come back, everywhere they go, the pair of them, it doesn't matter, home or away, they're on the tightrope. And Celtic know that Rangers have this game up their sleeve, at home, to a bottom six side. So everywhere the pair of them go, it's a real test of nerve.
I mean, Rangers did get that win against Celtic last season, so it is worth bearing that in mind, just to be accurate. But let's take some calls. Stevie and Bishop Briggs is first up. Hi, Stevie.
Hi, good evening, lads, and a happy new year to you all.
Same to you, Stevie.
Hugh, you did mention something to me, and I'll tell you exactly what you said to me a few months ago on the phone. I'm now sitting here as a Celtic fan, and I'm looking at what's happening. I think this will go to the wire this season. If Celtic go ahead and win it, okay, congratulations, they've done it. But next season, I think Rangers will be right on their tails even more next season. If Rangers don't win this league this season and stop the 9 in a row, I think they'll stop the 10 in a row. And I know what you said to me a few weeks ago, Hugh, and I do totally agree with you. Neil Lennon doesn't win this league this season to make it 9 in a row. You told me one of the managers will get the sack. So he'll get the sack. Stephen Gerrard doesn't stop it. Is Stephen Gerrard going to get the sack? Now, get every bit of respect for Stephen Gerrard. That's why Rangers are the way they are. Rangers are the way they are because Stephen Gerrard has got them firing and knowing they can go and they can challenge for that league.
Now, I happen to think that you have to get this one out the way before you discuss next season. It's only logical and only reasonable. This league title is in the balance. If you don't believe that, then you don't know what you're talking about. It's in the balance. And therefore, everywhere that Celtic and Rangers go, they have to show the right mentality. And if they don't win at places like Dingwall or at Hamilton or at Livingston or at Kilmarnock, that's their fault. The two games they play against each other could be absolutely pivotal. And the only thing we have to go on is the last piece of evidence. When Rangers went to Celtic Park and Rangers were just too strong for Celtic. That's what Celtic have to guard against, and that's why I think they need a couple of players in this window. And Rangers at the moment are sitting confident, full of self-belief, and have the backup where it counts, where Defoe backs up Morelos.
How are you feeling about the transfer window at the moment, Stevie? Still relaxed or starting to get a little bit anxious? Which is it?
I'm not getting anxious about it. That's up to Celtic, that's up to Rangers. But Celtic don't bring players in, and they don't win the league. They've only their self to blame. And the fans that go every week and pay the money can turn round and say, we lost the title because they didn't bring in players. Scott Sinclair leaving? Big mistake. Scott Sinclair could have done a job for Celtic to get them over the line and win this league title.
Yeah, listen, I understand what you're saying. I don't agree with you with Scott Sinclair in terms of his game time is very, very limited. It's not like he's playing and been impacting the team a lot this season. Scott Sinclair's actually a friend of mine, and I know he's been frustrated at not playing, and he just wants to go out there and play, and he's got that opportunity now. I'm glad he's got the opportunity, but I don't think it's a mistake letting him go, because ultimately he wasn't going to play for Neil and for Celtic. So I think that's good for both parties. Potentially frees up some funds to go and bring somebody else in, and it gets Scott back playing minutes again.
Right, Stevie, enjoy your weekend. Let's move on to John in Provan Mill. Hi, John.
Evening, Gordon. Evening, boys.
How are you?
Just before I get to my Celtic point, you think Harry's not took his medicine. Anyway, Craig, you made a wee point earlier on here, mate. I don't know if you're factually right. You said if Rangers won their game in hand, they go top.
That's correct, yeah.
Well, Celtic, that game doesn't happen till after the next Old Firm game in March. So Celtic won at Ibrox for talking sake. Celtic go 5 clear, eh?
Well, if everyone keeps winning, you mean?
Aye, if everybody keeps winning, Celtic win at Ibrox, Celtic go 5. So if they win their game in hand, they won't go top, Craig.
Uh huh.
So that's what I'm saying. So that's I need to correct you on that, mate.
Right. I think, do you not mean just in the, if they keep matching each other and
yeah,
then
course.
Rangers
course
win it? That's what you mean.
Because we've been talking about kind of hypotheticals all night and throwing figures about and throwing winning league titles and 10 in a row. And so we're talking, Rangers have got a game in hand. So do the maths. If they win their game in hand,
if everybody wins and everybody keeps winning,
as what we're doing, then yeah.
They won't go top, but mate. If everybody keeps winning and Celtic go to Ibrox and win and Rangers win a game in hand, they won't go top. But anyway, let me get to my point about Celtic. I think Celtic would buy. I think they need 4 players.
Oof,
and my 4 players
four?
Are. Aye. A quality. Now, listen, we can't be buying guys coming in for to develop, etc. A quality left winger. A quality striker beside Eddie for backup. And I would say a quality defender and a quality playmaker midfield. So
you're not satisfied with the sort of Christie is the number one in that role and Tom Rogic and maybe no, Cham is back up?
No, Gordon, I really do think we need a playmaker and a quality centre half. I just think we need that bit of more stability at the back. I know the big guy Ayer's alright, but I think we need a quality centre half, a quality left winger, left winger quality, and a quality striker to back up Eddie.
I think there are times to let's take it from the back. There are times when you look at Christopher Julien, when he fell apart at Livingston and Celtic lost 2-0 against St Mirren. I know Celtic won 2-1 there, but again he looked distressed and all over the place. I'm not sure he's top drawer. I know the money was good, £7 million, but I think they do need backup in that area. I noticed Jozo Siminovic.
Do you think it's likely though? Because you can always make a case to upgrade anyone, can't you? You can always say, well, you know, you should strive for better. But I just wonder, with the money spent on Julien so recently, the majority of the feedback you get from Celtic on Christopher Ayer, uh-huh. a new contract given to Nir Beaton as a sort of backup, and with Jozo Siminovic, is it really likely? I know you can point to any player and say we want one better than him, but do you think it's really something Celtic would address this window?
Oh yeah, I do. I think they're looking for someone in that central defensive area. I think there have been causes for concern. This might come down to two games against Rangers. At the moment, would you put... Well, let me ask John. John, would you put your house on Celtic beating Rangers, home or away at the moment?
Yeah, what I will say, right, the second period of the league, right, the second half of the league, Celtic, I think they will come back stronger. I do think, Hugh, and I'm not just, I do think Celtic will strengthen here, and I mean, I do think they'll bring in some quality signings. I do think they will, because like your last caller said, Neil Lennon, Steven Gerrard, their jobs are on the line, no matter what you say. If Steven Gerrard doesn't win the league this season, I would question his position as well, because he's not done the business in the last 2 years and he's had plenty of money to strengthen that team. But what I will say to you, I do think Celtic are capable of going to Ibrox again and winning. As Julien interviewed tonight, he's like, OK, they come back stronger, we've got Butts, etc, etc. I do think Celtic have a better mentality. You say Rangers are sitting with a good mentality. Yes, we did. Listen, it's ifs and buts, you. In that game, if Celtic scored a penalty, blah, 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 ifs and buts and maybes, right? But what I will say is, Celtic need, in my opinion, Celtic need four players, quality players, no development players. I think they need a quality left winger, a quality centre-half, a playmaker. I mean, I don't think we've got a playmaker at Celtic at all. Somebody to take the ball with scruff of the neck and run there. I don't think we've got that type of player. And I say...
Let me put that to Craig, John, just because we're running out of time, but you make a lot of interesting points. Let's... to see what Craig thinks. The Celtic needs a playmaker.
On the playmaker one, I think Ryan Christie's in absolute top form at the minute. I think the relationship on the pitch he's got with Odson Edouard is absolutely different class. So for me, you don't need a playmaker. You've got Scott Brown and Callum McGregor that tend to break things up. McGregor gets higher up the pitch, chips in with the odd goal as well. So in terms of a playmaker, are you going to spend £2-5 million on a playmaker to sit on the bench? I don't think you are. I think we've seen recently how much Neil Lennon and what he thinks of Olivier and Cham, that he's sort of changing players about to getting Cham in the team. So a playmaker for me is not an option. But if John gets his four quality players, almost half of your outfield team, then his initial point will probably prove right, that Rangers won't go top of the league.
John, thanks for the call. 01419511025. Are you heading out to a championship game tomorrow? What about you, Partick Thistle fans, Morton fans? Some big games to look forward to. Why not give us your thoughts if you're on your way out to one of them? 01419511025. And we could be speaking to you after the travel with Stephen.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Personal Injury Solicitors. They play to win every time. Talk to Thompson's.com.
Craig Beattie and Hugh Keevans here with me, Gordon Duncan, on tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. We are on Twitter at Clyde SSB, and we're also on the phone 01419511025. Looking ahead to the Championship tomorrow, taking a look at some of the transfer rumour and speculation that may be doing the rounds. And of course, after seven, as always during the winter break, we try and do things just a little bit different, shine the light on some stories that we don't always get to do during the regular season. So we will do that after 7 o'clock. The January window as a concept, Craig, people seem to be split on this. I keep hearing that it's a difficult window. Mark Guidi simply just doesn't buy it. He made his case very strongly on Wednesday. Rangers signed Defoe and Davis in January. What's difficult about it? If you know your player, you go and identify them and you get them in, and that way they can really bed themselves in for the following season as well. Are you expecting any significant business for the big two in Glasgow during the window, or is it going to be mostly backup? Because even though everyone keeps saying Celtic are definitely going to go and get this striker, chances are he's going to be Edouard's understudy, is he not?
Yeah, I think they'll be looking to find someone who's going to play second fiddle to Edouard. He's been absolute top draw, and purely and simply, if he doesn't play regular from now at the end of the season, his value would go down, which doesn't benefit Celtic neither. So Celtic will be looking for a kind of second, third choice striker. I know they've also got other strikers there, but they'll be looking for that. You know, the two wingers have gone, we've previously touched on, they'll be looking to bring in a winger, so they might be looking at a kind of slightly higher profile winger. That'll probably be the key area, having two wingers have left the club recently, or potentially anyway.
Seen still tweets you, the contribution made by Scott Sinclair is what leads to this reaction afterwards. It's not easy to let a player like him go quietly. There's always going to be that nagging doubt if you've made the right call, just simply because of how successful he was at the beginning of his spell.
Yeah, player of the year, etc, etc. However, his contribution to Celtic had started to diminish. I don't think anyone could question that. And now, to make a case out for saying why they're letting him go now, he could have been the difference between winning the league and not winning the league. That's unfair. It's unfair on Celtic. It's also unfair on Scott Sinclair. He simply didn't get the game time this season to merit that argument being made on his behalf.
Let's take a look at some of the Championship action tomorrow. Any Partick Thistle or Morton or anyone else of different clubs that are involved tomorrow, any other fans out there heading along to a game or keeping an eye on it, give us a call right now, 01419511025. Ian McCall's looking forward to taking on Dundee United. Both teams, he says, in top form going into the game. He says naturally they will be wary of his former player Lawrence Shankland as well.
Aye, it's a big game. I mean, they have shown a level of consistency that's really been outstanding. So, and I think, as I said, I think the form table shows that we're second. Well, it's not a table I really take much notice of, because the main table is the one that matters. So you could say it's the two form teams in the league just now. So aye, it should be good. We'll have a big noisy home support, and I'm sure they'll bring a few down as well. My worry about Saturday is that Shankland's not scored for two games, and I don't think he's ever went three games without scoring. So I've got to say they've done a terrific job. I mean, to have the most money, comfortably the most money in the biggest budget, that brings with it its own pressure, and they've handled that really well, and they've shown a level of consistency that's miles ahead of everybody else. So it looks like they'll go in and win the title comfortably, but hopefully not turn ours over for them.
Good game that one tomorrow.
Yeah, Hugh. I mean, the mighty Jags of Glasgow to themselves tomorrow. I'd love to think that people would go along. People who are not Partick Thistle supporters, who just want to see a really good game, and this is a really good game. Ian has tempted Providence by saying that he's never known Lon Shankland to go three games without scoring. But it's a huge afternoon for Partick Thistle. The psychological benefit of beating Dundee United would be considerable, and could have a great effect. As I say, it's not out with the bounds of possibility, arithmetically or any other kind of way, that Partick Thistle could yet make the promotion playoff places. If they could get a win tomorrow, the belief that they would have in their ability to do that would soar.
Yeah, listen, this is going to be as big a game tomorrow as Partick Thistle are going to make it. Dundee United are the forum team, there's no question about it. They've won their last five away matches. They come down to Partick Thistle tomorrow in super forum. Shankland he's drew a goal, as Ian McCall touched on there, and this is a big pressure. But for me, how are Partick Thistle going to approach this game tomorrow? I know they're the second form team, Ian McCall's just told us that, but Dundee United are the champions. Are they going to go into the champions elect? But are they going to get in this match, Thistle, tomorrow, but really believing that they can win? I think they really have to. If they don't, they could well be in trouble.
Potentially interesting news for Partick Thistle fans tonight. It looks like they're closing in on a move for Zach Ruddon, the Rangers striker. Had a very good spell at Falkirk last season, scored a lot of goals, went on loan to Plymouth this season. I think he's got a couple of goals, not as many as last season, three so far, and it looks like he could be set to join Partick Thistle. Interestingly, just if you keep an eye on Scottish strikers, Ryan Hardy has gone to Plymouth, and that looks like it's paved the way. Still, well, only 19, of course.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, doesn't seem like it'd be in tomorrow if a deal could be done. But Partick Thistle blow hot and cold, and you could argue their form away from home is better than their form at home. But tomorrow, they have this massive incentive. If they could beat Dundee United, the team who are romping away with the title, it would have a tremendously positive effect on them.
That for me, Gordon, with Zach Rudden going to Thistle, that's a great opportunity for both parties, I feel. You know, Thistle have got a young, hungry striker. He's going to a big club. He's going to learn his trade. But he's going for me to learn his trade alongside Kenny Miller, who's been one of the most prolific strikers, and you know, he's been a top player for both Rangers, Celtic, down south and international.
He will
level.
Have seen it previously at Rangers, of course, but this will be a closer relationship, you'd imagine.
Be able to get on the pitch with him, see how Kenny goes about his business, have Kenny talk him through matches. So, you know, if Zach takes the most of this opportunity, it will be invaluable to his career.
I long for the day, just from a completely neutral and, well, I suppose, Scottish perspective, Hugh, I long for the day that we get a good striker coming through at Celtic or Rangers. Yeah. Zach Rudden does good things at a youth level for Scotland and for Rangers. He's 19, so naturally I just wondered if he would be the one. So if that association is going to end, I wonder when we'll see the next striker. There have been some good players brought through in Celtic, have made a lot of money off their academy, as you well know.
Yeah.
When are we going to get the next number nine through?
I mean, Charlie Nicholas was back in the early 80s, and I can't think of someone of Charlie's calibre to have come through at Celtic in that time. They've always bought McAvenny, McClare, McGarvey, and so on and so forth up until the present day with Odson Edouard. So you're right, it's a peculiarity. The Celtic Academy has produced star after star, but no strikers.
Like I say, just a general curiosity of mine, I'm sure. It doesn't really matter. John is on Twitter. He says, Gordon, as Rangers are not playing, me and my dad and son are going to Ardrossan Winton Rovers v Trun Junior Cup game. Hope the weather is nice. I wouldn't hold your breath on the last part, but hopefully you have a good afternoon. We did our focus on junior football last night. It was good fun. Let's leave that there because it's already time for this.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
It is Beat the Pundit time, your final chance of the week to come on here, answer as many questions about football as you can, and if you get more right than Hugh Keevans or Craig Beattie, you win a signed ball. It is as simple as that. You need to phone before 7 o'clock though, so don't hang about. 01419511025.
Be faster, feel younger, live healthier, and make this year your year. Clyde One have teamed up with Glasgow Club to help you achieve your 2020 vision. It's all about keeping active and looking after your mind and body.
Swimming is a great option, so take a plunge in one of the 12 pools to feel relaxed and refreshed.
Share your vision now at ClydeOne.com for the chance to win an annual membership with Glasgow Club.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Personal Injury Solicitors. Compensation you deserve. When there's been foul play, talk to Thompson's.com.
Hugh Keevans and Craig Beattie here with me, Gordon Duncan, on tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. As you well know, at this time of the year when we've got the winter break, we like to try and look a bit beyond the obvious, try and do something a bit different, look at the sides of the game, the stories out there that we don't often get the chance to cover. So we've got two special guests for you in the second hour tonight. We have a young up-and-coming female referee who you will find out a lot more about in a few moments, and we've got Paul McNeil from the Scottish FA, who you may remember joined us at a similar time last year. We're going to talk all things grassroots football as well. I know so many of you feel passionate about different aspects of grassroots football and everything that goes into it, so don't be shy, give us a call, and we could be speaking to you right after this.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
Beat the Pundit time. Craig Beattie is as nervous as ever. He'll eventually grow out of it, Hugh.
Yeah.
What a state he gets himself in. Look at him.
He's like genuinely does. He's in the boxing ring and gives it his best shot.
You, on the other hand, couldn't care less, to be quite frank about it.
So hit me your best shot.
Let's toss the coin and see who'll be playing. But first, let's meet tonight's contestant. He's Ryan, he's from Paisley, and he's a Celtic fan. How are you tonight, Ryan?
I'm good, thanks.
Would you have a preference? Would you like to try and cash in on the nerves of Craig Beattie, or would you go for the old experienced head?
Craig Beattie all the way.
All the way, he says. Doesn't have much faith in you, Craig. I'm going to toss the coin. If it's heads, it's Hugh Keevans. And if it's tails, it's Sweaty Palms Beattie, which would be the worst boxing name ever. Guess what? You're off the hook again.
Oh, no.
It's Hugh, it's heads.
I've got to be honest, I was up for that there.
I see
when Ryan called me out, I had
I don't respect you, Craig. I've got a lot of respect for you.
I know it's coming, Ryan. I know it's coming.
He tells you his bottom lip's been trembling all day. Then he tells you he was really up.
Likes you.
Oh. Your dad doesn't like you.
Not many people do. Your dad.
Oh, he couldn't dial 0141.
Annoyed him too many times over the years, I suspect. That's let's give Hugh some.
He's in the majority.
Let's give Hugh some Clyde 2 to listen to. And that way he can't hear us anymore, Ryan. So it's just you and I. You have 30 seconds head to head with Hugh. You can pass, remember. So if you don't know it, pass it and move on to the next one. Are you ready?
Ready.
Good man, your time starts now. Which Aberdeen player joined Salford City in 2018?
Adam Rooney.
What year did Gretna make the Scottish Cup final?
2011.
Celtic's Lewis Morgan looks set to join which MLS side?
Miami FC.
What was the name of St Johnstone's previous home ground?
Oh, pass.
Who will Rangers face in the Europa League next month?
Braga.
Who is the current manager of Inverness?
John Robertson.
Which five side are currently top of the Scottish Lowland League?
Rafe
Rover. Oh, Cove. Okay, let's bring Hugh Keevans back. Hugh, can you hear us?
I can.
Great, same set of questions to you. You ready?
Okay.
Let me turn my page back. Here we go. Which Aberdeen player joined Salford City in 2018?
Adam Rooney.
What year did Gretna make it to the Scottish Cup final?
2011.
Celtic's Lewis Morgan looks set to join which MLS side?
Inter Miami.
What was the name of St Johnstone's previous home ground?
McDermott Park.
Who will Rangers face in the Europa League next month?
Braga.
Who is the current manager of Inverness?
Pass.
Which Fife side are currently top of the Scottish Lowland League?
Lowland League?
Which Fife side are currently top
Kelty
of the
Hearts.
That's the first time I've seen you take a genuine mind blank. The manager of Inverness is your old pal.
Oh, Robbo.
I don't know what went on there. Let's find out. Are you feeling Robbo, confident, Ryan?
Robbo.
You feeling confident?
I also said McDermott Park. How stupid is that?
McDermott Park. That was the one I passed.
Ah, that was wrong anyway. Don't worry about him.
It was Muirton Park.
Let's find out the damage. Who joined? Which Aberdeen player joined Salford in 2018? It was Adam Rooney. You got off to a good start, both of you. One all. In what year did Gretna make it to the Scottish Cup final? Craig, can you remember?
No.
2006.
Oh, I've done my sheet.
That's no use now. You didn't have the confidence to say it when I just asked you. Celtic's Lewis Morgan looks set to join which MLS side? It's Inter Miami. Not exactly what you said, Ryan, but I'm feeling quite generous since it's Friday, so we'll give you 2-2.
Oh, bro. Hugh.
What did he say?
What did he say?
Miami FC.
FC.
Oh, I tell you what, if I had said that, I would be deducted the point.
Producer Andy, what's the final verdict? Ryan, you're never going to believe this. Producer Andy's docked you. He's not having it.
Love it, Andy.
Yeah.
Honestly, cynical Canadian Andy.
Ruthless at the 5 minute this morning.
For what it's worth, I would have given you
the greatest Canadian is Leonard Cohen.
Okay, he's taken it off you, I'm afraid. So Hugh Keevans gets it, goes into a 2-1 lead. What was the name of St Johnstone's previous
Muirton Park
ground?
What a dump it was.
Who will Rangers face in the Europa League next month? It's Braga. You both knew it. Who is the current manager of Inverness? It is John Robertson. Ryan knew it.
Yes.
You didn't. And which five side currently top of the Scottish Lowland League? You got there in the end. It is Kelty Hearts, Hugh Keevans, which means 4 for you and only 3 for Ryan. Hard lines, Ryan. Blame producer Andy. I would have given you.
Oh, I should have.
Quick,
Craig.
Listen,
but Ryan, God's honest truth, I took the headphones on and I done it with you and I get 6.
Nah, you're just saying that. It's easy to say that.
That's
when
it. Well
you
done,
can ask
pressure, guys.
But no pressure on. It's different.
I just smashed it, Ryan.
Oh, Ryan, don't give us it.
Tell your dad I was asking for him.
Oh, he's listening.
Oh,
in the car.
Good man. That was Ryan and Paisley taking part in Beat the Pundit tonight. Bit controversial, if you ask me. I didn't mind Miami FC, but there we go. Maybe I'm just getting generous in my old age. Producer Andy, you should have seen the look in his face. You know when referees brandish the red card with real conviction? That's what Andy just did.
Yeah, and it's a festive season too.
And we've got a referee joining us in the studio. That was the flawless link there. Like I said, if you're just joining us in the winter break, we always try and do just things a little bit different. Take us away from what we usually do during the season. Try and look at some of the stories, some of the aspects of our beautiful game that just simply don't get the coverage that they otherwise deserve at the busier times in the season. So tonight we've got two special guests, Isla Buchanan, who is a young up and coming female referee, and Paul McNeil, who joins us from the Scottish FA. Paul's been on before talking all things grassroots football. Thank you both for joining us. How are you?
Pleasure.
You well?
We're very well, Gordon. Thank you.
Paul, you also occasionally phone in as a passionate, irate, happy, dependent St Mirren fan. So are you happy with the transfer business so far?
My gaffer told me as I was leaving Hampden not to mention St Mirren, so I might be getting my P45. Right. Yes, well,
sorry about that.
Transfer window's going well. We're delighted and we're not bottom, so as a St Mirren fan, that's magnificent. Stand up is good to us.
So far, so good. Now, Isla, I'm interested in your story, and I feel like I almost feel bad saying female referee as if it's some sort of disclaimer, but it, you know, it's true. We don't have too many. We certainly don't have many at the absolute top level. So yeah, your story certainly is an interesting one, and I, as you do in the social media age, looked on your Twitter profile before you came on tonight, and it says quite simply, 19 years old, football referee, football saved my life, is the next line, and that jumped out at me hugely. Just to explain what you mean by that.
So I got into football when I was 10 years old. I was kicking a ball in the back garden with my siblings, and I wanted a pair of football boots, and my dad said, nah, you're not getting a pair of boots until you join a team. That night, went along and joined a team. My local team, played for a good 6 years with my local team. Then at the age of 12, my mum had a stroke, and I'm one of six kids, so quite a lot of younger siblings. I'm the second oldest, and I ended up becoming a young carer. Whilst my dad was out at work, mum was either in the hospital or she was at home, still not 100%, still in her bed, and we had to look after her. I was walking my siblings up to school, had to cook, clean, iron all at the age of 12, and football was the only way I could escape as such and get out and be your typical 13, 14 year old girl that could be, you know. Everything went out of my head when I had my football boots on and the ball at my feet.
And what was that like then throughout your teenage years, which I'm sure are difficult for everyone, but in particular, you know, some of the things that you were mentioning there, because it's quite a strong statement that you say, you know, football saved my life. What then happened afterwards, and how have you managed to sort of focus everything into football and then ultimately refereeing?
So I did all that I could. I was playing, I was coaching, and then at the age of 16, I qualified as a referee. So I was doing all things I possibly could involving football to get myself out. So I was coaching 3-4 times a week, playing twice a week, and then refereeing got started, and that just kind of took over, but in a good way. So I qualified at the age of 16. 6 months after I qualified, I did my first amateur football game. So I was refereeing guys that were potentially old enough to be my dad. So that was, at the age of 16, being able to send them all off was brilliant. So yeah, that's how I got into it. And it still is a very much an escape route for me. If, you know, I have a bad week or a bad day, you know, I'll either watch a game or, you know, I'll go out and kick a ball or whatever, something to do with football. It's still how I get out of it.
So, I mean, the ultimate sort of question is then, when we talk about the impact football has, where would you be without football? What would you do without it?
I've always said, and I've done talks since the video came out, I've always said I wouldn't be standing here today with you guys in the studio if football wasn't in my life. I'm very open and honest about that. It has truly saved my life, and that's why that statement is in there like that, because I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for football.
So what do you mean by that? Just life struggles were getting too much for you before football came along?
I fell very mentally ill with anxiety and depression. Was on medication, counselled twice a week, and it was tough being at school, and then I was 16, sitting exams, hires, you know, it was just so much going on, and I just generally couldn't cope. Stopped going to school quite a lot because I just didn't want to. I was the anxiety of leaving my mum on her own, or, you know, having that worry of when I'm at school, of my mum, what is she eating, drinking, you know, is she okay? I stopped going, and then going to school was a big struggle, and football made me feel normal as such. You know, it was there for me, and it was something I could do when I wanted to do it, you know, when I had the time, and being able to teach other younger kids and, you know, share my experience through football as a young coach, and then being able to referee them at young age and, you know, kind of inspire them and to kind of guide them along as well. It's a great opportunity for me.
There we go, Hugh Keevans. Anyone who says it's just a game, it's a lot more than that, is it not?
Yeah, I'm just standing here listening to Isla, and you know, we work the deluxe end of the market. It's all about the Premiership and Celtic and Rangers and millions of pounds and wages and transfers and so on and so forth. You forget, in fact, you almost don't know what a story like that means. you know, for someone who has shown the mental courage that Isla has, who has overcome the problem she's had to overcome, and at the core of it all, it is football that has given her the life force, if you like, to handle daily life. And I'd like to think that all the family are doing well now, Isla.
Yes, yes, they are indeed. My mum's actually, in about 20 years, got her first sort of job in 20-odd years, working in a nursery. She's got six kids. I mean, perfect job
for
her.
Good practice. Yeah.
But I mean, you say, I feel as if I hardly understand the game anymore, because you come into this business and you have the pleasure and privilege at times of working with household names. But Isla has brought up a real story, a story of human life. Mm-hmm. And I'm tremendously pleased to see her here, clearly enjoying the football so much and looking so great.
And Paul, this is where you come in, you know, in your role of head of community development at the Scottish FA. What we sometimes forget, and by the way, it's not a bad thing. Of course we focus on that upper 1%, you know, our top flight, our top four divisions, where things are won and lost Saturday afternoon. But the reality is, the vast majority of people, their contact with the game of football just comes in many different ways, whether it's through kids, amateur level, junior level, club academies, people getting into refereeing, volunteering, coaching. There's so much more out there that you can get involved with that can make a difference to you.
I think Hugh touches on it very well when he talks about we are fascinated about this sport. It's a global sport. It speaks so many languages across the board, but it's just played with one round ball, and we can inspire a generation. We've all watched the top end of the game. That's why we get into it. We get our Panini sticker album when we're 8 years old, and we take our stickers and we get really excited. But the majority of us get involved in a game because we're passionate about it. We love it. And Isla's a total inspiration to us. She's a young girl who's got involved in something and inspires another generation. That's what our beautiful sport does. It inspires people to be better human beings. Very similar to Isla, I don't think I stand here without the sport, because it taught me values. It taught me the good grassroots values, that being on time, being respectful, being somebody else. I started in the game probably about in the very early 80s, and you learned something about yourself in there. You learned about that human touch, somebody coming up to you and going, are you okay? Are you going to be okay? Or making sure you're on time. So for me, it is a labour of love. I left a shipyard in the 90s to go back to university, because I'd been let down in school, and I wanted to try and get back into something that I could give back to the community. And I think every day I'm inspired by somebody else. And I speak about our game, and people laugh, or used to laugh quite considerably when I used to talk about magic dust. I believe I've got magic dust, and I can throw it up round about a young person, and I can make them believe that their life's a bit better. And in the modern society we live in, with food banks and everything else that goes with that, we have a chance to make a smile go on a young person's face by playing our beautiful game. Now, they might go on and captain Scotland, fantastic, but they might just have a beautiful life. And for me, that's what our sport does, and it's absolutely tremendous in this courage. And I really do mean it when I said at the very start a thank yous, because you's right, you have to give up the majority of the time speaking about the top end of the game. I totally get that. So I respect you so much for giving us this opportunity to speak about our game.
I've got to tell you a quick story here, Paul. I spoke about the deluxe end of the market and always working with the top guys. But when the top guys remind you that they have their feet firmly on the ground, that's great. Now, as Gordon knows, one of my grandchildren is severely autistic and needs carers every day. One of his carers is John McGinn's uncle. At the festive season, John McGinn came up with an Aston Villa shirt for my grandson, signed it for our Michael. And I thought, this guy has got all the problems going on just now. He's got a bad injury. Will he be fit for Villa? Will he be fit for Scotland in the playoff against Israel? But this guy thought, I better get a shirt for that boy. And he brought it up. Now there's John McGinn. The feet were on the ground. And that's, to go back to the point you made, Paul, that's about the habits he's learned He had a great family, but the habits he's learned from the game of football
and
as well.
Is that where you come in your professional capacity, Paul? Grassroots football, when I say that, I know it's quite vague. I know that covers like it covers a lot of things, and hopefully we'll get some calls and some thoughts on Twitter. But is that where you come in terms of just trying to get as many people participating as possible? I don't even know what percentage turns out to be a professional footballer. It'll be absolutely minuscule, I would imagine. But even if you think you're too old, there's walking football. If you think that you can't become a player, you could become a referee. As Isla's there's coaching. You know, I couldn't even begin to rhyme off the list of possibilities. Is that what you and other people at the Scottish FA are trying to tap into?
So I always say my role is to inspire and to connect to people. Now I think you touches on it very well. I still think we're underrated with regard to what the grassroots game can do within a community environment. If I look at, and I'm a very, very privileged human being, I have to admit that, I get to go and see Germany, I get to go and see the Scandinavian countries. We are not a sporting nation. We love sport, but we are not a sporting nation yet. As in, we don't participate. We have an obesity epidemic we talk about young people having challenges in society. What I think we have to do is we have to give back to our communities. Now, when I grew up, it was the uniform groups, so the clubs, the scouts, the boys' brigade, so on and so forth. They were a cornerstone of your community, the same that libraries are that for people. Now, I think our grassroots community clubs, I was really, really intrigued to listen to Clyde Bank last night when they were on the show. And I think they did themselves a disservice because they were talking about just one part of their club. They've got 250 playing members. And they've came from nowhere again. They were defunct, but they've got back. And they're giving back to their community. That's 250 people who are active. So we have to kind of go across. And I think we have to challenge our government, we have to challenge our local authorities, but we have to challenge society. Our heartbeat of our communities is our grassroots clubs. People love them. People will go that extra mile. They will volunteer. They are passionate about it. And it gives so much back to society. So my role is very much about tackling that. You mentioned me being an irate Simon supporter. I will jump up and down until the day I die to keep mentioning about Scottish football, particularly at the grassroots level. Because if somebody else doesn't do it, I have to do it. You talk about John McGinn, I think he's fantastic for us. I think the McGinns are brilliant. The two of them at least play for St Mirren. So it does help. But they are. But they're ambassadors for our sport. And if we can get more ambassadors for our sport and more people saying, football is not the ills of society, it is one of the greatest cohesions we have for Scottish society.
Okay, let's leave that there just for a quick breather. I know so many of you could be involved in the grassroots game at any level. You take your kids along, maybe you're your coach, a volunteer yourself, a referee, anything, walking football. So many aspects to this. If you've got your own experiences and thoughts and memories that you want to share about your involvement at a grassroots level, let's have them. 01419511025.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Road Accident Solicitors. The compensation you deserve when you've been sidelined. Talk to Thompson's.com.
Hugh Keevans and Craig Beattie here with me, Gordon Duncan, on tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard, where we are joined by two other special guests. We've got Paul McNeil, who's the Head of Community Development at the Scottish FA, so we're talking all things grassroots football, and Isla Buchanan, who is a 19-year-old female football referee making her way in the game, but she comes with a very inspiring story as well, which I'm sure you will agree if you listened before the break. Unfortunately for Paul and Isla, the full-time teaser stops for no man or woman, and it must go ahead. So we've had this question sent in
Isla,
for
write
you
the
tonight.
Down and slip the piece of paper across to Craig and me.
Unfortunately, Hugh and Craig don't have the best track records at the full-time teaser.
Hugh came up with one.
I think that just about covers it. So I've got this one for you.
Love and Hardy, okay.
Now let me just find who has sent it in so I can give them the shout out they deserve. I can't find it right now, but I will. However, the question is this: can you name 11 players that have scored in a Scottish Cup final and have more than 50 international caps all this decade? So the Cup finals have to be since this decade, sorry. I'll read it again for you. Yes. 11 players have scored in a Scottish Cup final this decade and have more than 50 international caps. That's it. There's no other caveat.
Right, we'll get thinking on that, Hugh.
Yeah.
We'll get you don't back have any.
Probably Tuesday or Wednesday.
You don't have any yet? No. Oh wow, I thought you'd at least get one to kick us off. just think of players that have played up here and got a lot of caps and scored a lot of goals. There's some really obvious ones.
Callum McGregor.
No, I mean really obvious ones. I didn't say capped for Scotland. I just said capped.
Oh, capped.
My goodness. I mean, really, really obvious. I mean, who might have scored in a Scottish Cup final and also played a lot for his country? Oh, this could be a new... This is an all-time low. He had dreadlocks when he first came
Henrik
here.
Henrik Larsson.
Thank you. Finally.
More than 50 caps for his country, though.
He's got 106 caps.
I'm not talking about Henrik. I'm talking about the other 10 we don't know.
Some of these guys have got over 100 caps as well.
Might be Welsh.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
John Hartson.
Well done.
John Hartson. Not like he was a former neighbour of yours or anything, Craig.
I've missed the question completely.
Right, one more time,
go.
11 players have scored in a Scottish Cup final this decade and have more than 50 international caps.
Right, okay.
Ayla, do you see what we're working with in here?
I love it, I think it's brilliant.
It's not always easy. We're going to get back to talking about the world of refereeing, and from a female perspective, we'll find out a bit more about Paul's role as well. Let's speak to Andy in Finniston. Andy, what's your sort of involvement or thoughts on the state of grassroots football in Scotland at the moment?
I know, but how are you doing, boys? I don't know, right?
Hi, Andy.
About 10 years ago, I went through a wee couple of training courses, and I started off doing the football team at St Patrick's Primary and Anderson, and then about 2 years after that, I realised another school along the road, Anderson Primary, so I went, get them involved. So we were really good on a Saturday, training on Monday night, brilliant. We were good at six asides on the wee ass of top at St Pat's. We won 3 out of 4 cups, get beaten the final 1 year. Brilliant, 11 aside. Saturday was a wee bit harder because it was trying to get 11 boys and girls to turn up. It was red ash. And now that about four years ago, I had to chuck it because I was working away a lot. And now I've realised there's no football teams, as far as I know, in the two schools. And, you know, the kids, Anderson, have always had good football teams. Even my older boy, he played when he was 18, 19. Great team. And now you go, it's a sin that there's no... The kids helping to get... You know, I love football, and I know the Wayne's loved it, but now you just feel that they need more help for the kids.
Well, let me put some of that to Paul, because you make some good points, Andy, and it's worth being clear, Paul. Every single thing that happens at grassroots football, it's not all your responsibility. There are a lot of facets to it, and schools is part of it, and then you've got you know, the professional side of the game, and then of course councils play a part because of prices of all the rest of it. So it's a big picture. What do you make of sort of Andy's story though, and what are perhaps the main challenges we still face at getting as many people involved as we can?
Yeah, they're all extremely valid points, and I think anything taken in isolation is always really difficult. One of our big tasks certainly when I came in to post, which isn't yesterday, it's probably well over a decade ago, was how do we grow our grassroots community clubs? Now, the point that's made is very valid, because what was happening a lot of the time was people would come and say, I've started a team, and then somebody would fall out with each other and the guy would go, oh, it's my ball, and the team would crumble and nobody would go on. So we've got to look at sustainability, and we've got to look at how do we grow those ones. So I mentioned Clydebank there, the Giffnocks, the Drumchapels, the old big clubs, providing lots of opportunities, so we don't lose that. Now, the other thing is, we have a tendency to always speak about the team. So we always speak about a team and a team that plays on a Saturday. For some young people coming into the sport, they simply want to be with their friends and enjoy the game. So a lot of the things we do around about there is more having fun, letting them play, maybe finding that pathway. Because sometimes players go in and they go, oh, I don't really want to be playing 11-a-side football, because I just want to go and kind of do it. So it's the maturation levels of children, when they want to play, when they want. So we want to try and make those opportunities. So for us going forward, it certainly is, how do we build those club infrastructures to make sure that people are in, as Isla says quite articulately, if it isn't for sport and she isn't there, she doesn't stand here today. It might be something else. Same with myself and same with so many other young people. So we try and work as best as we can. We do actually have record numbers within our sport. We have again shown another increase in registered players. We show an increase in children's football at the moment in time. So the traditional way that people used to maybe consume the game, if that's the best way, was you would do it at school. Majority of players now go to our grassroots clubs very early. So we're trying to build, and I think that sustainability bit, so one person isn't the key person risk, is so, so important.
What's the main message at the moment then? How do we keep our young people interested, engaged? What's the main message that you guys are trying to get across in all of our local communities?
Yeah, I think we have a big strapline of the kind of hashtag let them play, and it's about stepping back. I think sometimes we're quite overly coaching young children, and sometimes that just puts them off. So we do see dropouts in sports. It is quite a traditional bit that we find a lot of people will drop out of sport and we lose them forever. And that's a sin for me, because as a guy well in his 40s now, I love the sport and I still play it and I still enjoy it. I take my son's team, I just look at the beaming smile on these kids' face and I see how important it is. I see how important it is for Eiler and for so many other people. So for me, the big thing to push for is changing the culture. Sometimes the result is not the most important thing. Sometimes it's just saying to that young child at the end of it, did he have fun? And if they say yes, that's you got a result.
Craig Beattie, you go along with that, because there's clearly a balance to be found. We want to create a nation of winners who go on and win things and get us to major tournaments, but there's a lot to football. We're not talking elite adult players here, we're talking about the bigger picture.
Yeah, I think there's a time where you have to teach your kids to be winners. I think first and foremost they've got to enjoy it. And I've got two young kids myself, 9 and 13, and it's still the first thing I say to them when they get in the car after the football: did you enjoy it? Great, brilliant, back next week type thing. One of them's playing at academy level at the minute, and still for me that's the academy coach's role and job to give them the kind of tactical training and the technical nous that's going to get them hopefully through the game. For me it's just about enjoyment. Mm-hmm. And as soon as one of them don't enjoy it, then we'll go somewhere else, we'll find something else. But you know, I spoke to Gordon in the past about this. When the kids were younger, I've actually seen myself consoling opposition kids, because their dads are giving their kids such a hard time. And I'm talking about 6, 7 years old. Mm-hmm. Young goalkeeper can't save the ball for the tears in his eyes because his dad's giving him penalties for the side of the goal. Yeah. And I've had to kind of shuffle around the side of the goal and say, by the way, you've been the best player in the park here, you conceded a few goals, but you've stopped it being double figures, etc. So I think for parents listening, I've got young kids out of football, I think they need to take a backward step in terms of their emotions. I think they need to manage their emotions at the side of the park after, and ultimately, and your enthusiasm is great for it, and I've seen you working and speaking before. And if everybody was like that, you know, the football world would be a much better place. Unfortunately for us, and unfortunately for the kids, it isn't.
Like we said though, this isn't all about trying to become a footballer necessarily. Ayla, you are in a not a unique position, but maybe an uncommon one. Like I say, a young up and coming female referee. The old question that you always hear: who wants to be a referee?
You get that a lot. I still get it.
So what's your answer?
To start off with, I was 16 at school. Really, I needed the money, to be fair. I didn't want to be a waitress.
I will be honest,
I needed the money. I didn't want to work in a cafe on a Saturday afternoon because I was so passionate about the game. I wanted to still be involved in the game whilst making money, and this was a great opportunity for me. Now that I've progressed, I'm 3 years qualified now. I'm flying off to Oman at the end of January to go out and referee a tournament out there with 9 other referees from Scotland, which is incredible. I'm really excited. And it's just opened so many doors to me. And now it's more about opportunities, and especially for female refs and up and coming with football, and, you know, inspiring the young female, you know, players to try and get into something else as well. There's so many other opportunities than just playing. So, and refereeing is a great opportunity.
Do you know the scope for female referees in this country? Do you know how far you could go? We see a lady gaining the respect of the players in the English Premier League. Mm-hmm. Will that ever happen here? Do you know where your ceiling lies?
I mean, one day, I hope. That's my aim. Is, you know, I want to get to FIFA. I want to, you know, get to the Premiership. You know, I want to get as far as I possibly can within refereeing. Whether females will ever have the opportunity to be in the middle of a Old Firm game, you know, who's to say they can't? But I still think it's where female referees are still quite a long way off of having that reputation of, oh, they have the same job, they can do the same as the male referees can.
Do you still feel, what sort of challenges or barriers do you face? Do you face any? What's it like being on the field with 22 grown-up male footballers? Does it feel any different? Do you think they act any different?
They definitely do. I mean, I get a lot more respect than the male referees do. I still get abuse, but that's to be expected. You know, it's your typical sort of standards. When I signed up to do the course, I thought, right, signing up to get abuse, brilliant. But I do get a lot more respect. It can be different. It can be intimidating at times. You know, I'm walking up, especially when I have two teams that I've never refereed before, I'm walking up to the pitch and they all stop their training, they all stop their warming up and look at me. Oh, that's a female referee. And it makes me laugh. It does make me giggle quite a bit. But then I go in the game and I treat it like any other game. You know, they're just 22 players on the pitch to me. They're not female, they're not male, they're just players to me. I'll treat any game the same. And I think they respect that as well, just me being what I'd do in any other game.
Yeah, I was going to ask the same thing, Gordon, because as you know, I play amateur football on a Saturday at times when I'm obviously not in here, and we had a female referee last Saturday, which is the first I've encountered that. So the game starts and probably unconsciously I treated her as though she were a male referee. So some of the
pulled this, though,
yeah, of course. Like, some of the but Ayla's saying that she gets more respect than the males do because she's a female.
So you were the opposite. You were giving dogs abuse.
Well, I wasn't going to say that, but
we need listen, a stern talking to, don't you?
I've voiced my displeasure at any decisions that I disagreed with, as I would do a male counterpart. Listen, and we had a bit of banter, but after all the dust had settled, you know, the lads were sort of changed, and just outside I met her and I had a little bit of banter again. So I apologise unreservedly for the dog's abuse that you got during that match. And she went, well, absolutely no chance. She's like, I actually respect the fact that you treated me as though I were a male. I was going to ask that,
where is the line between getting the recognition for doing something that is a bit different, and perhaps there is a bravery involved there, but then also not being patronised? So what's the, how do you sort of see that picture?
Like, my very first game when I was 16, like, it was so intimidating. I was a nervous wreck, you know, before the game. Whereas now, you know, I'm from Perth, so within the Perthshire Amateur that I referee in, I get, now that they all know me and know who I am, like, I turn up to a game and they're used to me being there. So it's like, I don't want to be treated differently, because at the end of the day, I'm there to do the same job as a male referee would do. Why do I have to be treated? Because, you know, I'm a female. So I think, you know, it's been a great opportunity for me, and to have some more authority as well, and show that females can do exactly as what the males can do.
Great stuff. What about this teaser? Let's see if the males can come up with any answers.
We think you've got the wording wrong. You told us it had to be this decade.
This decade.
Oh, sorry.
John Hartson, 2006.
Sorry. This century. Did I say decade?
You said decade.
Do you know
three
why?
Times, Gordon.
Do you know why?
Tell me.
Because I've been obsessed with decades all week. We've been the team of the decade. Right. It's written down in front of me. That's just a slip of the tongue. Mikey Burns sent the question in. It says right here, since 2000.
This century.
Okay. Sorry, my sincere apologies.
Hartson,
so that's why you were doing so poorly, is it?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Without doubt. Barry Ferguson.
Let's see where he is in the sheet. Not according to Mikey, no.
Stylian Petrov?
Yes.
Rudy Scatchell?
Nope.
Peter Lovenkranz?
Nope.
Yeah.
Any more? Get one more Scot in there. Okay, I'll give you some more.
Lee McCullough?
I'll give you some more thinking time. We're going to speak to Paul and Gara Hill next.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Personal Injury Solicitors. The league leader for compensation. Talk to Thompson's.com.
Hugh Keevans and Craig Beattie are here. Our two special guests, Paul and Isla, are still with us as well. We've not scared them off. Paul and Gara Hill has been hanging on for ages, so I'm going to take Paul's call before we look at your teaser. Paul, sorry for the wait. What's on your mind tonight?
No problem, Gordon. Good evening, and good evening to all the guys and Isla as well.
Hello.
I'm really frustrated. I coach a primary school team along with my two sons. It's actually two teams, A team and a B team, and my pal, and we've been doing it a lot of years. And our problem is trying to get goals. We train on a Wednesday and play on a Saturday on a 4G pitch in a school, which then condemned the goals, and now we don't have goals. So we've tried the MP, we've tried SFA, we've tried Fit for Life, tried everywhere, because we don't have the funds to buy a new set of goals, and it's really frustrating. We can't get the kids on the park because we don't have goals.
Like I said earlier on, Paul, I mean, you're not the goal distributor, but Paul's is a very valid concern, and there are loads like it. So I wonder what level of communication or cooperation the National Association has with whoever is responsible, whether that is councils or anyone else, because surely we all have to be pulling in the same direction for this type of thing to work.
Absolutely. I think that they're always valid points. I mean, I take a team myself, I take my son's team, and we do find it difficult to fundraise, to do other things. That's what I say. I think when I was mentioning earlier on that we're maybe not a sporting nation, it is this bit about we always find that frustrations about, is there goals, is there balls, is there equipment? And I think our bit is, do we invest enough into community-based sport? Is that something that we're really, really keen? If we want to have the better chance for making a nation healthier, more active, then we have to look at things like that. They are difficult. That's why I spoke earlier on about one of our big things is about building our club infrastructure. Because sometimes it was one person doing it, and the one person key risk is always that somebody would go, ah, it's no my sport, and throw the balls in the garage and lock the door and nobody would get to play. It's the same as when you grew up in the 80s. One guy had the ball, and if he went up the road, the game stopped. So I do get the points, but we have to kind of champion, I have to champion to make sure that clubs are built, they're robust, they can gather more funding, we can champion for better things. And I think if we make better case studies, like Zylers, about what the benefit is to the human community and to society, we got a better chance of bringing down funding.
Paul, I share your frustration, and it's a frustration that goes back to my childhood, if I'm being perfectly honest. Now, as somebody at the almost, I'm 36 next week, and I still get a thrill out of scoring goals and popping the ball in the net, or even just in the goal. Now, I used to remember that my local council used to take the goals down during the summer holidays, and they used to grow the pitch, and there was no AstroTurf facilities available back then. And I mean, the kids locally now, they're having to jump over the fence in the local school to use the AstroTurf facility, and there's nothing more enjoyable than sticking the ball in the net, and you're going down the park with your pals and you're having to put jumpers down to make goals.
Can I mention one then it's a good one in that one. So it shows you what their community development can do. So if I take a Pollock, for example, so Pollock Youth Academy joined with the junior team, they built a facility right in the middle of Pollock. They built it off their own back because they wanted to give something back. They leave the gate open. There is never any vandalism at that pitch because of what they say. They leave the gate open and they leave two footballs in the goal.
Yep.
Because the young people can come down and open the gate. And I think that's where we're trying to get to. Is this bit about what we see in terms of community sport?
Again, to me, it makes total sense. And even if you were to put a community officer down there in a presence to go and supervise the pitch, if you're keeping 20, 30, 40, 50 kids away from the streets, you would actually save money incurring to police the area further down the line.
I agree. And I think that's most of the things that we're trying to see is our grassroots clubs are now starting to say, we own facilities, we can take them on. They want to be the heartbeat of their community. That's what they really want to be. They love it.
Just to Paul on the line though, Paul, aside from your concerns, we're exploring the big picture here as to why people get involved in football, because we're not talking about guys who go on to play at the elite level. We're talking about the people like yourself, the volunteers, the people who put in the hard work and don't get the publicity. Why do you do it, Paul? What is it that keeps you coming back?
I've been doing football for a long time. I ran a team in Bayliston for 12 years, which was a pretty successful team. And then when I retired last year, my son talked me into going back helping the school kids, which we do. John McManus, who takes the team with us, has been doing the school team for 25 years. And this is his frustration as well now, that the fact that the schools, when the goals were condemned, they hadn't the budget to replace them. And we've got to raise £135 a month just to pay to train on this park with no goals. And it's really frustrating. But I really enjoy working with the kids. It's great working with the kids, teaching them new skills, getting them to play football. But it's really difficult to play football when we don't have goals.
I think we have to go right back to Isla's first words here. The effect that the game of football had in her life saved her life. Not my words, hers. And therefore we have to be aware of football's place in the community. The SFA do everything, I'm sure, in their power. The SPFL will contribute. But society has to help society as well. And I think that we have to have a look and bear in mind that this is about health, mental and physical, and society has to play its part in making sure that young kids, male and female, have their mental and physical health looked after, and they have to chip in and help.
Paul on the line, thank you very much for your thoughts. Hopefully you managed to improve the picture at some point in the near future. That was Paul in Garrow Hill. I think that will be the last call, I'm afraid, tonight. But thank you for Paul and the others for contributing. I'm afraid you've got so much work left to do in the teaser that we might need to get to it quite quickly.
No, sorry, Isla slipped us a few answers.
Go on then. The question, and I apologise for reading it out wrong. I've got the right words in front of me. I'm just decade in the brain because of the team of the decade. We're looking for guys who have 50 international caps and have scored in a Scottish Cup final since and including the 2000 final. So
Kenny
you've
Miller.
Got Henrik Larsson, John Hartson, Stelian Petrov.
Kenny Miller.
Yes.
Joel Edley.
Yes.
And Giovanni yes. van Bronckhorst.
Five still to go. This is that's when not a classic.
That's when Isla's pen ran out.
I think it ran out when the question was asked.
Right, you've got all the British ones. In fact, some of these are pretty far flung. Certainly
Nakamura. Yeah.
No, but you're getting warmer. Okay. And I'm being really vague. Don't put me on the spot with the geography. Put it this way, he's closer to Japan than we are. What if I said South Korea to you?
Kim Sung-yong.
Yes, well done. Oh. Right, we're going to need to go the other way. Or you could go all the way around if you fancy it. What about the USA? Scored in the 2008 final for Rangers. Nope. The other ones, keep going. You two are hopeless at this, I'm going to be honest. Really hopeless.
Give us his initials.
DB. But it's kind of DMB. DeMarcus Beasley. See, glad you're here, Paul.
Thank you.
What about big defender you would have played with him at Celtic?
Bobo Baldi.
Yes. 52 Guinea caps. Any Australians that might have scored in the 2000 final for Rangers?
2000. Craig Moore.
He's pal. To the left of him, probably.
Clowns to the left.
You're murder. Tony Vidmar. And the last one, we could be here until the next century and you wouldn't get this. A Lithuanian? At Dunfermline?
Nah.
Played for Dunfermline?
Yes. Scored in the 2004 final.
Kazanaikos.
Andreas Skerla. Wasted a good question on you two. Thank you, Hugh and Craig. Thank you for all your calls. Special thanks to Paul and Isla.
Thank
Hope
you
enjoyed
again.
It. Thank you very much for joining us and sharing your stories. We are back tomorrow. Focus on the lower leagues from 2 o'clock. So please make sure you join us. And it's GBX Fridays up next.
One Super Scoreboard with Thompson's Personal Injury Solicitors, the form team for compensation for more than 40 years. Talk to Thompson's.com.